I moan, as I wrap my hands tightly around him, sucking the head into my mouth before allowing him to fuck me as he wants, wildly and out of control. His hands go down to my throat, circling my neck in a light hold as he starts thrusting. Slow at first, he gains more and more speed, grunting as the head of his cock reaches the tight space at the back of my throat. I hum lightly around his cock, the vibrations giving him additional pleasure.
That's my bad girl.
His breath catches in his throat as he throws his head back.
Fucking hell, Lizzie mine. You own me. You fucking own me, body and soul and everything else that I am.
He mumbles, almost incoherently. Moving my hands to his ass, I let him fully take control as he chases his pleasure. God, how I love it when he uses me like this, when I'm the only thing that can make him feel good. A medium through which he can reach his peak. And as I lose myself in his features, I forget all about gagging or choking or the tears that fall unbidden down my red cheeks. There's only him before me. Eamon, my lover, my protector, and my master. For him I would do anything. For his happiness, I'm capable of anything. One hand remains tightened around my neck, while the other goes up, tangling in my hair and pulling my head back. His eyes collide with mine, as blackness stains the whites of his eyes, until everything is black. Dark currents surround us as he watches me, a mix of lust, want, and unyielding tension that tells me just who is in control. I may have fooled myself into thinking I was the one leading this, but that role belongs entirely to him.
Just like that. Suck on it like the bad girl you are, Lizzie. My bad girl.
Just as I think he's going to come, he suddenly pulls out of my mouth. I inhale sharply through my mouth, dragging a harsh breath into my lungs, just as he pushes my hands aside. My eyes widen, yet it's not in shock, but pure anticipation, as I cannot wait to see what he's going to do next. His left hand curves alongside my neck, palming my nape as he holds me tightly to him. His other hand grips the base of his cock, bringing the length against my face as he smears all the wetness on my skin.
How bad will you be today, Lizzie mine?
He asks me in a hypnotic voice.
Tell me, where should I come?
His arresting gaze has me pinned to the spot, and I find myself at a loss of words, simply staring into his beautiful features, ravaged by the most extreme lust. He slaps his shaft lightly across my cheek and my lips. His mouth has an arrogant tilt as he taunts me with the promise of his release.
Should I come down your throat?
He drawls, pushing an inch of his cock between my lips. He only lets me give him a couple licks before he moves.
Should I come on your beautiful face?
He continues, dragging the tip across my face.
Or?
He pauses as he licks his lips.
Should I come on your lovely tits?
I gasp at his question, but before I know it, his fingers tighten over my nape, and he looms dangerously close to my face. He licks my lips, giving me a maddening kiss before he pulls back, too fast.
Cup your tits, Lizzie. Hold them for me and play with your nipples.
He suddenly commands. Though the thick fog of awareness makes it hard for me to think straight, I slowly bring my hands to my breasts, squeezing them before I pinch my nipples. His features darken.
Fucking hell.
He curses, his eyes glued to my chest as he strokes his cock in slow, languorous movements. Arching my back as I thrust my breasts forward, he takes advantage of the position to slip the head of his cock between the valley of my breasts. My breath hitches as I feel him there, and bringing my breasts together, I create a tight and hot environment for him as he starts thrusting.
That's it, my bad, Lizzie.
He rasps. Haman, I moan as I touch myself while he takes his pleasure from my body. Come on me. Everywhere. I breathe out. Cover me in your seed.
Oh, Lizzie mine, you want to feel me everywhere, don't you? You want to smell of me everywhere you go, so no one can ever doubt who you belong to.
He pauses on a groan as he increases the rhythm of his thrusts. I keep my breasts together for him, and when he releases his hold on my neck, I dip my chin down, licking him every time he surges forward. A string of curses are wrenched out of his mouth as my teeth catch his ring, holding it in my mouth for a moment before opening my lips over the tip of his cock and sucking.
You're so fucking hot.
He moans harshly, his features tight as his climax builds.
I just need to look at you and those fucking pouty lips of yours, and I am about to burst, Lizzie. You drive me so fucking insane with want.
He rasps.
You're my madness, the fever in my blood, a never fucking ending psychosis that leaves me breathless, helpless, and so fucking weak with want for you.
His words arouse me to no end, and when he rips himself from me with a biting curse, I present myself to him. I'm your canvas, I whisper, my fingers on my nipples. Paint me, Amon. Paint me, I moan, as I meet his crazed gaze with my dazed one. He furiously works his cock, his grip tight as his muscles tense with his impending release. Ready to receive everything that he is, I drag myself closer to the edge of the bed, just in time for the first spurts of cum to hit my face before going lower to my neck and chest. He comes so hard in never-ending jets of cum as he mocks me all over. His grunts become louder as he paints my entire front in his seed, turning me into his very own canvas, his creation.
Just like that, Lizzie mine. Take my cum. Take everything that I am.
He grinds out as he finishes. Yes, I reply in a breathless voice. There are still a few drops hanging on to the tip, so I lean forward to catch them with my tongue, sucking him in and cleaning every inch of his cock. He's barely in control of himself, his breathing harsh, his eyes still full of lust. Giving him a come-hither look, I lean back, falling on my elbows. Still holding his gaze, I bring one finger to where he'd come on my face, swirling the semi-white liquid all around my flesh before dipping my fully coated finger in my mouth. I do the same with the remaining seed on my neck, but when I reach my breasts, he suddenly stops me. Gathering his cum with his own thicker, bigger fingers, he brings them to my mouth, pushing every last drop inside. But just as I think I have his trajectory figured out, he surprises me by flinging my legs over his shoulders and burying his head between my legs. His tongue connects with my bundle of nerves, and I barely keep myself from jumping out. I'm already so overstimulated that even one touch can set me off.
You're so fucking wet.
He growls against my center.
All for me.
He hums as he catches my bud between his teeth. Yes, oh, Haman. I writhe under him.
From sucking my cock, because you're a bad, bad girl who gets off on being face-fucked by a mate.
He rasps, blowing hot air against my wet slit. Yes, 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 I mumble incoherently. I only need two flicks of his tongue, and I'm already coming, squeezing him tightly between my legs as my hands find their way to his hair, gripping tight as I scream his name. The orgasm is so powerful, I barely catch my breath as I fall against the crisp sheets, too worn out to do anything.
Lizzie mine. Lizzie mine.
He whispers against my inner thigh before he continues to lap at me. I can't. I wheeze out. But he isn't deterred. He is determined to wring everything out of me until I'm a quivering mess, until I can't even utter another word. My eyes snap shut, and before I know it, sleep claims me. I don't know how much later I wake up, but when I open my eyes, I find myself completely cleaned up. The sweetheart must have given me a bath while I was out. Eamon is sitting on the chair opposite the bed. He's still naked. Dipping his brush into his colour palette, he brings it to the canvas in elegant, smooth strokes.
You're awake.
He raises a brow, an arrogant smirk playing at his lips. How many times did you make me come? I yawn languidly as I get out of bed, pulling a robe over my body.
You passed out on the floor. I think you need more practice, Mrs. Creed.
He winks at me. I rather like Mrs. D'Artagnan better, I quip as I make my way to his side.
What's in a name, love?
He murmurs lovingly as he lays a kiss on the top of my head.
You would be mine under any other name, just like I would be yours.
My lips tip up in a smile, but as I take in his painting, I can't help but gasp. That is... I trail off, suddenly at a loss for words. You made me so beautiful, I whisper.
You are beautiful, but with my cock in your mouth.
He whistles suggestively. I chuckle, swatting him playfully as I continue to study his work. He'd painted us perfectly as I lay naked before him, my lips wrapped around his cock and my eyes on him, always on him. You're so talented, I pray sincerely. He merely grunts. For a fearsome general such as he, his passion for painting had not been something he'd been able to indulge at will, not until he'd gotten here. Not until us. I feel sad that this world will never know his talent, but he insists on making me the subject of all his paintings, and given the intimate nature of the poses, neither he nor I would ever want these made public. They are for our eyes only, for our enjoyment. Later in the afternoon, the children come back from the little ocean adventure, and we set about preparing for the celebration that will take place the following day when our tiny village will finally be upgraded to the designation of town with a new name, Fairydale. The town council had come together to vote on it, and to my dismay, everyone had wanted to name it Fairydale for Eamon and me, and the help we've lent to the people of the area. It won't just be a celebration of the town, but it will also be a personal one for us. We finally belong somewhere. Unfortunately, the future will be challenging. It's been almost 15 years since we've moved here, and considering that neither Eamon nor I have grown any older, people are bound to start asking questions at some point. When we decided to have a family and raise our children here, we had to consider the implications, and so we came to the agreement that once Lydia is settled at her home, we would take some years and travel around the globe before returning with new identities. Eamon has already taken his aging role seriously and has slowly renounced his darker hair in favour of white, his natural hair colour. The following morning, we all wake up early in preparation for the town fair. Giving Eamon a quick kiss on the lips, I leave him to deal with the boys while I go help Lydia dress. To my great surprise, instead of finding her still abed and hard to get out of bed, she's already up and spry. "Mummy! Mummy!" she squeals when she sees me, jumping straight into my arms. "You're rather cheerful this morning, aren't you?" I chuckle as I kiss both her cheeks. "It's the fair! Of course I'm happy!" I can't wait to see the sign, and I want to eat some yummy food. You're saying it as if we don't give you any yummy food. Well? She pauses, deep in thought. It's not that. It's just that food on special occasions tastes better than the same food on normal days. You're so witty, aren't you? I pat her head affectionately as I open her closet, asking her what she'd like to wear. Lydia, I repeat when I see she doesn't reply. She's deadly still next to me, and immediately my worry mounts. Going to my knees, I take her cheeks in my palms, looking her all over. Diddy, baby, what's wrong? Her eyes are out of focus, even as she looks at me. He will wait for you, at the old church. He will wait for you. He will always wait for you. What? What old church? There is only one church in the village, down the hill from our home. As soon as the words are out of her mouth, she recovers, blinking as she takes me in. Immediately I realize that she likely had a vision, though she's never reacted like this before. Since she started speaking, she would always blurt out things that never happened or that were not real and we didn't know what to make of them. That was until they did come to pass, and we realized it was her gift that was manifesting through visions of the future. Lydia, baby, who will wait for me? I ask softly. Papa, she answers, a sad smile on her face. He will wait for you to defeat the bad people and save him. Me, I smile. I'll save him. She nods. But I'm not there, she suddenly says, and her face falls. Did he? I trail off, pulling her into my arms. Don't say that. We'll always be together, you know that. I tell her gently. We won't, she replies. But it's fine, Mummy. You have a more important mission to fulfill. She adds ambiguously. Just as I'm about to question her some more, she jumps out of my arms, going to a closet and rummaging for a dress to wear. I try to plaster on a smile, though her words worry me. My Diddy has never been a normal child. The visions she has affect the way she interacts with the world, often giving her a far more mature and jaded outlook than she should have for her years. When my mother heard about her gift, she was beside herself with happiness. She even visited once a few years back, but since she has remarried, she's been more preoccupied with her marital life than with the coven. For the first time, I think she's truly in love, and has found someone who cherishes her just as much. This one. She takes out a pretty yellow gown. I smile appreciatively at her choice. Let's put it on, then. I help her into her gown, after which I spend some time doing her hair, plaiting it in a simple braid. Since she'd seen me wear mine like that, she'd demanded I do hers too in the same manner. Look how pretty you are, I gush when she's done. I love it, she declares, putting on her shoes and telling me she's ready to go. Shaking my head in amusement, I take her hand as we head downstairs. Eamon is deep in conversation with Abraham, while Abel is a few paces away. I purse my lips at the sight, not liking that Abel is always keeping himself separate from the family. While Lydia considers us her parents, Abraham and Abel remember their real parents. We would have never asked them to forget them and accept us instead. Yet whereas Abraham had embraced our family, and as of a few years back had started calling Eamon father and me mother, Abel had not. Though he has his good moments, he is always distant, preferring to spend his time in town, or going to Ipswich rather than be with his family. Lately, though, his visits have become even rarer. Maybe he has a girl he's seeing in Ipswich. He is already 20, so it wouldn't be out of the question for him to court someone. But he hadn't told me anything when I probed a few weeks back. And if he is semi-engaging with me, with Eamon he's even worse. Luckily, Eamon has the patience of a saint, because every attempt to get closer to Abel has blown up in his face. Even so, he never quit. He always tried to find a way to include him in activities and converse with him. "Are you ready, boys?" I call out as we near the landing of the stairs. "Abraham!" Lydia exclaims as she runs towards her older brother. He takes her in his arms, laying a kiss on her temple.
"You're so pretty today, Dee Dee,"
he murmurs. "You think so? I like this dress so much."
"You're the prettiest princess."
Eamon leans in to give her a kiss, too. Abel snickers from the side, and I fear he's going to ruin today as usual. Eamon gives him a reproachful look, and he huffs at him before walking ahead of us. Unfortunately, it's not only his relationship with us that is strained. He's not particularly close to his siblings either, though he is at least more courteous. I know he loves Lydia in his own way, but he isn't very demonstrative, preferring to keep to himself. Abraham, on the other hand, couldn't be more different. He's the sweetest boy, and he's made me and Eamon extremely proud by graduating from Harvard with a degree in classics and apprenticing for a lawyer in Boston. He's already set to start his own practice in the future. Despite having a title waiting for him in England, he's decided to make America his home for good. Eamon, in particular, has been extremely happy with Abraham's choice, and as a subject they both enjoy, they've dedicated evenings to debates and animated discussions.
"You look wonderful, Mama,"
Abraham says as he gives me a kiss on the cheek. "Thank you, dear." I smile. "You look dashing, too. You're going to see Annie, aren't you?" I wink at him. He reddens, giving us a brief nod.
"You need to muster the courage and propose,"
Eamon says.
"She needs to know you're serious about her. As a matter of fact..."
Abraham pushes his chin up.
"I'm going to visit her parents on Monday."
My eyes widen in surprise, just as Eamon claps him on the back, congratulating him. "You've grown so much." I blink my tears away, unable to believe my baby is already at a marriageable age. "I'm so, so proud of you."
"Thank you, Mama."
He smiles.
"Shall we?"
Eamon motions to the door. Abel is already far ahead of us, almost as if he didn't want to associate himself with us.
"I'm surprised he came."
Abraham nods towards his brother. "Honestly, me too." I sigh, wondering where we went wrong with him. "Didn't he rent some lodgings in Ipswich? You know more about him than us." I add on a sad note.
"Barely. Other than the few times he randomly decides to come home, I have no idea what he's up to. He didn't even show up for Diddy's birthday."
He presses his lips in a flat line that shows his disapproval. Abraham is very protective of Lydia, has been from the moment she was born, whereas Abel has always had a more independent streak. Preferring to do everything on his own, Abel contrasted with Abraham, who had been content to rely on us, both for company and for advice whenever he needed it. In a way, I am almost glad that Abel isn't as close to Lydia, though that makes me feel like such a bad mother. Yet I wouldn't want him to influence her with his negativity. He's made his distaste towards us quite clear. I wouldn't like him to poison Lydia's mind, too. The last thing I'd ever want is for my daughter to believe his propaganda and alienate herself from us as a result. He's a loner. We shouldn't try to impose on him too much, I add weakly. He's also a grown man now, and can make his own choices. Eamon is watching Abel closely, his expression tinged by sadness.
"At least he comes home every now and then,"
he finally says. "My love," I whisper, taking his hand and squeezing hard. He sees Abel's behavior as his own failure, and though Abel often behaves in an impetuous manner, Eamon always finds excuses for him and tries not to punish him too much.
"You're too soft on him, Papa. He needs to understand that he won't get anywhere with that type of behavior. And more than anything, he needs to know that family is family. We have to stick together."
"You're so right," I nod. Lydia jumps out of Abraham's arms as she finds her way between me and Eamon, taking our hands and firmly plastering herself in the middle. We all laugh at her antics, and the noise prompts Abel to look back. At the same time, my eyes connect with his, and I note a flash of yearning on his face, one that makes my heart hurt. At that moment, I resolve that I shall have a conversation with him. Maybe there is still time to solve our differences before he leaves and gets married as well. It takes us some 20 minutes to reach the newly minted town square, but we opt to walk the distance as we talk and banter, getting in the mood for the upcoming festivities. As soon as we reach the area, the music resounds in the air from the people who've decided to take their instruments out and help with the atmosphere. Eamon had also donated a piano for the pastor's son, who had learned to play, and he is leading the local orchestra. There are stalls of food and other services, almost as if this were a veritable international festival. We stop by a few of them as we buy Lydia some dessert before the elected mayor clears the space to give his little speech. He does us great honour by including our names in his acknowledgements and declares the town hereby named Ferrydale. As soon as the announcement is over, the music starts anew, as does the dancing. Couples hurry to the middle of the square, getting together and moving to the music. "Let's dance!" Lydia tugs on our hands. Giving Eamon a look, I wink at him and push him forward as he takes his daughter for a dance. He's so tall, and she's so small that the size discrepancy is absolutely hilarious.
"Dance with me, Mama."
Abraham comes to my side, taking my hand in his. "Of course." I immediately agree as we join Eamon and Lydia on the dance floor. They are both laughing, and after some time, Eamon takes her in his arms, dancing with her like that. My lips pull up in a content smile as I hug my son to my chest.
"Are you really fine with me proposing to Annie? I know she's not of our station, and..."
"Nonsense, dear." I cut him off. He should know that I, more than anyone, have no care for stations or conventions. "Do you love her?" He gives me a confident nod. "Does she love you?" Another equally certain nod. "Then you know what to do. I only want you to be happy, dear. If that is with Annie, then so be it." I give him a smile.
"Thank you. I wasn't sure whether you and Papa were going to agree to the match."
"Your father wants you to be happy as much as I do, and he's known about your feelings for a while now. He was just wondering when you were going to give us the big news."
"I'm hoping for a quick wedding so I can take Annie with me to Boston in the spring,"
he tells me, explaining his plans for the future and the fact that he'd done his best to make contacts in the city to help him with his future law cabinet. "That sounds fabulous. I'm so proud of you and how you've thought this all out." I praise him gently, my heart swelling in my chest. God, my son is about to get married and move to his own home. I can't believe how the years have passed. "If you need any help, you know you can count on us, right? Not just money, anything at all," I assure him. His lips spread into a big smile.
"I know, Mama. I know. I love you,"
he tells me as he gives me a tight hug. I can barely contain my tears. "I love you too, son. All of you are my joy." We dance as we make more small talk, steering away from the serious topics and giving in to merriment. By chance, though, I spot Abel at the other side of the square, deep in conversation with someone. "Do you know who Abel is talking to?" I ask Abraham. He turns to look in Abel's direction, and he frowns.
"Isn't that the mayor's son?"
"Is he? I didn't recognize him," I say vaguely. I hadn't realized Abel had any connections here, but I'm happy if he made friends. The first dance ends, and Abraham ends up swooping Diddy in his arms for the next one, while I wink at Eamon, beckoning him to my side. Just as he reaches me, though, Abel is also here.
"Would you do me the honor of a dance?"
he asks. Eamon purses his lips but gives me an encouraging nod. He's probably thinking, just as I am, that this is the first time Abel has reached out like this, and we shouldn't refuse him. Eamon takes a step back, watching us like a hawk as I let Abel lead me back to the dance. We were all surprised you came today. I speak first in an attempt to break the ice. His features are tense, his body stiff. As he looks down at me, his mouth curls at the corners in a barely disguised sneer.
I came.
He shrugs. Abel, I take a deep breath. I know we haven't always been on good terms, but you know you will always have a place with us. I told that to your brother, too. It doesn't matter if you move out or start your own family. We'll always be here.
And my spineless brother probably agreed, didn't he? Because he's such a pussy he can't think for himself without the help of Father Dearest.
Abel! My eyes widen, scandalized at his words. How can you speak like that about your brother?
Because it's the truth. I don't blame Lydia since she's young, but you two managed to turn my own brother against me.
You're accusing us of turning Abraham against you. How in God's name did you get that notion? We've never done such a thing. On the contrary, we've always tried to be there for you.
Cut the crap, mummy.
He snarls, his expression darkening.
You think I don't know everything, that I don't know your secret?
What? What are you talking about? My voice trembles as I ask. His eyes scan my face, his upper lip twitching.
I've lived with you for 10 years, and in all this time you haven't gained one line on your face. As a matter of fact, your husband hasn't either, despite his white hair. He's what, 40-something, yet doesn't look a day over 25.
I don't know what you're talking about, I whisper.
Of course you don't. Grandma told us all about the family legacy, but she didn't tell me that you have some age-defying abilities. Or do you? I think this is enough for today.
Eamon cuts in, taking Abel's hand off me. He's a head taller than the boy, and as he gives him a scathing look, Abel has no recourse but to back off.
You're shaking.
Eamon says as he draws me into his arms. The shock is too great, and for a few moments, I cannot find my words. When I've calmed down a little, I tell Eamon all about our conversation. Do you think that's why he resents us? Eamon shakes his head.
I'll have a talk with him.
Don't be too harsh. I wet my lips as I look into his eyes. He's still our son.
I know, Lizzie. I know. I love him too, but that doesn't mean we have to accept his behavior, especially since it might be harmful to his siblings.
You're right. I nod. Resting my head on his chest, I let him sway me to the music as I turn my attention to where Abraham and Diddy are dancing. She's giggling at something Abraham said, grinning from ear to ear. I wrap my arms around Eamon's waist as I hold tight, needing his body heat and the support of his presence.
Don't be sad, Lizzie mine. I'll find a way to fix this.
He murmurs in my hair. As always, if Eamon says he will fix it, I know he will. After all, he'd never disappointed me in the past. The celebration lasts another few hours, and Eamon is invited to the makeshift stage to give a small speech, which he dedicates to me, making me blush from head to toe. Yet as everything comes to an end, we all start walking home for dinner. Luckily, I'd asked Esther, our cook, to have the food ready for a later hour. When we arrive home, I just ask her to bring it to the dining room, which she obliges right away. I missed having these events as a family, I say as I look around the table. Everyone is present, even Abel, who'd surprised us once more by coming home with us and sitting down for dinner.
May I have more potatoes?
Diddy bats her lashes at me. Who did you learn that from? I chuckle as I add more potatoes to a plate.
You? She says pointedly. You always do this when Papa's around and he does whatever you say. Isn't that true? She looks at Eamon to confirm her words. My eyes widen as I turn to him, too. His lips are curled up as he barely keeps his amusement in check.
She is right, you know.
He shrugs.
You only need to give me one of those looks, and I'm your servant.
A little embarrassed and quite scandalized, I move my gaze between the two of them. You two are conspiring together against me, aren't you?
Who? Us?
Eamon puts his hands up, just as Diddy does the same. Letting out a small laugh, I shake my head at their antics. How about this, then? I suddenly straighten my back. May I have another glass of wine, darling? I ask, as I lean into him and bat my lashes.
See, this is exactly how it's done.
He says in a serious voice as he fills my glass to the brim. We all laugh, all but Abel, that is, who's watching us with unrestrained disdain. I try to ignore it for the rest of the dinner, though it doesn't help the heavy feeling I have in my heart. Let's retire to the drawing room. We can play some card games. What did you all say? I clasp my hands together as I address them after dinner. Everyone but Abel agrees. Seeing him go out, Eamon follows to have a talk with him. Come, let's start without them, I tell Diddy, as the three of us make our way to the drawing room. Just as Lydia takes a seat next to me, though, she grabs my hand, holding it in a deadly grip. Don't give it to him, she whispers. Don't give it to him, please. What? Turning towards me, she gives me the saddest smile I've ever seen as she launches herself at me, hugging me tightly. It's not your fault, Mama. Please don't blame yourself. I will be fine. Even if it hurts, I will be fine. Diddy, what are you talking about? I ask, suddenly worried. What hurts? What happened? What did you see? She shakes her head slowly. I love you, Abraham. You're the best brother ever, she suddenly tells him, taking him by surprise.
I am.
He looks taken aback before he amends.
I love you too, Moppet.
Why don't you play with him for a little bit while I find your father? I tell her gently, as I try to hide the storm that's building inside of me. To say that her words scare me would be an understatement. I am certain she saw something bad, and she won't share it with me. Rising up, I give both of them a small smile as I head towards Eamon's study. I don't reach it, though, as I'm stopped by an echoed voice down the hall. Abel's voice.
I want to see you tell Elizabeth the truth. Tell her.
He taunts.
Tell her how you killed my parents, because I know it was you.
He accuses. My hand flies to my mouth in shock.
You don't understand, Abel.
Eamon tries to intervene, but Abel doesn't let him speak as he continues.
You forget one small detail, Papa. I was there that night. I saw the accident and everything that happened. I saw you. You couldn't have seen anything, Abel.
The voices drown out as a loud thud signals the door closing. Fearing I'll be found eavesdropping, I turn away, yet I'm barely able to process what I'd heard. It's preposterous. Ludicrous, even. Where would Abel have gotten the idea that Eamon was behind Olivia and Jonathan's deaths? He couldn't have. Could he? 3 days later, and I haven't been able to move on from what I'd heard. It's not that I don't trust my husband, or so I tell myself. It's that I know he would be capable of that. To please me, I know he would do it. On top of that, I'm exhausted from putting up my mental defenses so he doesn't see what bothers me, at least not until I get a better grip on my emotions. That day, early in the morning, I decide to leave the house for a moment and be on my own with my thoughts. But since there is nowhere else I can go, I make a visit to the church. Surprisingly enough, it is empty. As I allow myself inside, my eyes drift to the organ at the end of the aisles, and before I know it, my feet take me in that direction.
Sitting down, I tentatively place my fingers on the keys, the rich sound reverberating in the entire church. There's a melancholic quality to it in the way the bass fills my entire being, yet I'm at a point where not even music can help the turmoil in my heart. Could Aemon have done something like that? Otherwise, why would Abel accuse him of it? It is true that he'd been the only one to survive the carriage accident that claimed the lives of my sister and her husband, but he'd never once intimated that it was something else. That Aemon could have been guilty of it. Yet I still can't believe he would do it. He'd promised me he would never hurt my family, and my Aemon would never go back on his promise. Of that I'm absolutely sure. Yes, I nod to myself as I continue playing. It's senseless to accuse Aemon of that, since there is no way he would do it. Abel must have been mistaken. At the same time, why would he accuse Aemon now? Is this a new strategy of creating a rift in the family? A tired sigh escapes me, all the regret piling up. Dear God, but where did we go wrong with him? Why would he hate us so much when we've only wanted to offer him love and family? What could we have possibly done that he hates us so much? Tears trickle down my cheeks as I remember him growing up and becoming more and more distant, until even the polite words he'd say to appease us had turned into veiled insults. Every time he would say something like that, he would break my heart a little more. Yet now, to go as far as to accuse Aemon of such a heinous crime. It's clear I have to do something about it. I'd never want that type of rumour to reach Diddy's ears, or put any semblance of doubt into Abraham. I'm lost in my own thoughts, and I barely recognise there's another presence in the church. Turning to the entrance, I see my husband tentatively walk inside.
Lizzie?
He asks softly. My fingers falter on the keys.
Why are you crying? What's happening?
He comes forward, his voice anguished as he regards me. I shake my head lightly, but as I regard him, doubts assail me once more. Aemon, I wet my lips. I have one question, and please answer truthfully. He blinks in surprise. Dear Lord, but I feel guilty just thinking about this, but uttering it out loud. Somehow that wheels it into existence, both the doubts and the allegations. I heard you arguing with Abel a few days ago. I start, fully turning to him and fidgeting with my fingers in my lap. His eyes flare with alarm.
What did you hear?
He speaks slowly, methodically. As I look at him, though, I can recognize the signs of distress. God, I know this man better than I know myself. Why was Abel saying that you killed Olivia and Jonathan? Where would he even get that idea? He's still looking me in the eye, not answering, just watching me.
Lizzie.
He whispers, and something inside his voice scares me. Something about this entire encounter scares me more than anything. Aemon, I gasp. Tell me the truth, please.
Lizzie mine, you know I would do anything for you.
He says, as he stops in front of me. Dropping to his knees, he takes my hands in his, bringing them to his lips and laying kisses all over.
I would do anything for you.
He repeats, the emphasis unmistakable. You promised you would never lie to me, I tell him, as more tears accumulate in the corners of my eyes. He gives me a pained nod. You also promised you would never hurt my family, I continue, and his features darken. Please, tell me the truth, I whisper. Did you have anything to do with Olivia and Jonathan's deaths? I ask, dreading saying the words out loud. Yet the pain on his face is unmistakable. He squeezes my hands, bringing them to his heart.
trust me that I had no other alternative.
He speaks slowly, yet I cannot hear anything more than the confirmation of what I would have thought inconceivable. You killed them, I repeat, averting my gaze.
Lizzie, please.
I swallow hard as a thick lump forms in my throat. Pain radiates from my chest, my mind blanking on me as I'm sure this isn't happening. It cannot be happening. My husband, my beloved husband, would never do something to hurt me. Please leave, I croak, wanting to be alone before I break into a thousand pieces.
I can't do that. You know it. I can never leave your side.
Please, I need time. I need you far away from me, Eamon. Please, just this time. I mumble incoherently, the pain slowly unfurling and becoming far too much than I can handle.
Let me explain what happened.
He protests, but I shake my head. Not now. I can't even look at you, Eamon, I tell him as a sob breaks through. I need space. Time. Please.
Promise me we'll talk, that you'll let me explain. Please.
I nod absent-mindedly. Go, I whisper. He backs away a few steps, but falters as he freezes on the spot, his eyes on me, his expression more anguished than I've ever seen it. For a few moments he just stares at me, before he gives me a pained nod, disappearing from my sight. Unable to hold the tears at bay anymore, I bury my face in my hands as I let everything out. My marriage, the only thing I'd thought most secure, is now no longer so secure. He'd promised me. He'd... Sobs rack my body as I fall from the chair onto the floor, gathering my knees to my chest as I continue to cry out in an attempt to exorcise all this disappointment and pain that flickers in my chest. The worst thing? It's been 10 years, and he'd never once thought to tell me. Never once did he think I deserved to know. And if I hadn't overheard that conversation, he likely would have never told me. Good Lord! My own husband killed my sister and her husband. He killed our children's parents. How could he? The more I think about it, the more I break out in tears, my heart unable to find any mercy from the onslaught of emotions that are slowly destroying me. Is this why Abel has hated us from the beginning? Because he'd witnessed Eamon at the scene? Somehow that pains me even more. No child should see his parents murdered, and by the man who was to become his new guardian. God, but how must he have felt all these years living with us? How could he have borne it? For the first time, I understand why he'd always be so distant, why he would prefer to go far away rather than be with his family. He didn't want to be in the same room as his parents' murderer. How could you do this, Eamon? I whisper softly, my heart breaking bit by bit. How could you hurt me so badly? A sudden noise startles me from my thoughts. Whipping my head up, I note the door to the church opens again, and I quickly dab at my eyes. Getting up from the floor, I wobble a few steps before I realize who it is that entered the church. Abel and Abraham.
We were looking for you, Mama.
Abraham comes forward.
What's wrong?
He immediately asks when he sees my red face and tear-streaked eyes. I slowly shake my head.
What happened?
He asks as he takes me in his arms, hugging me tightly to his chest. It's nothing, I whisper. Just a minor disagreement between me and your father.
It doesn't look little to me.
He frowns as he draws back. I do my best to not let my heartbreak show, forcing on a smile and patting his shoulder affectionately. Don't worry, we'll work it out between ourselves. As I raise my gaze, My eyes connect with Abel's behind Abraham. He's looking at me intently, almost as if he was privy to every secret I ever held. "How are you, Abel?" I ask, feeling like a goddamn imposter as I do.
"I wanted to come check on you with Abraham,"
he says glibly. I frown, assessing him thoughtfully. There's a sinister air about him, his mouth curled in a derisive smile, his eyes glinting with hidden intention. "I am quite fine, thank you." I nod as I let Abraham hold me, rejoicing at the little comfort I find in his arms. Yet my true comfort is far away. Not only the cure to my heart, but also the poison that dances in my veins. In all these years, we never fought. We never had a disagreement. We lived in such perfect harmony that I became one with him just as he became one with me. To have ripped that apart, to realize I've been living a lie, to exist as a sole entity instead of a united one. It's not just the news that Eamon had something to do with Olivia and Jonathan's deaths that guts me. It's the fact that for 10 years he's been lying to me, making everything we lived together a lie. And to my great shame, the disappointment at his deception trumps the pain of losing my sister. I am a horrible human being, am I not? That alone makes me too ashamed to look my sons in the face.
"You found out, didn't you?"
he taunts, as he sees the emotions play on my face. "I don't know what you mean," I reply weakly, my hands trembling with fear. The last thing I want is to discuss this problem here, and with Abraham present, too.
"We should tell good old Abraham, too,"
he offers, a malicious smile pulling at his lips. "Maybe we should talk, just the two of us. Will you let us for a moment, Abraham?" I ask softly of my eldest son. He looks in confusion between the two of us, nodding reluctantly. I breathe out in relief that he doesn't question my decision, yet I'm still wary about discussing this with Abel.
"No,"
Abel declares.
"He needs to hear this too. What's happening?"
Abraham's brows are pinched together as he addresses me. I stammer, suddenly at a loss for words. "You should go," I urge softly, anything to have him away from this confrontation.
"Our parents' accident wasn't quite an accident, was it?"
Abel smirks.
"What? What are you talking about?"
"Your brother and I need to have a conversation. It's better if you go," I repeat, true terror taking shape within my breast. As Abraham starts to move, Abel jumps in front of him, his eyes crazed.
"Tell him, Elizabeth. Tell him who killed them."
I shake my head at him. "Please, don't." He throws back his head and laughs at my fearful expression.
"What are you saying, Abel? You know it was an accident."
Abraham argues.
"It wasn't,"
he spits out.
"It was all her husband, who isn't even a bloody human,"
he accuses, his eyes flaring with disgust as he looks at me. "Abel!"
"What is he talking about, Mama?" "Jeremiah Creed doesn't exist, brother. He never did,"
he continues, seemingly taking great pleasure in revealing everything to Abraham. I freeze at his words. How would he know?
"Her husband's real name is Eamon, and he is a demon. A fucking demon who killed our parents and disguised it as an accident. A demon who's been killing people for centuries."
"Abel, please," I mumble in an attempt to stop him.
Tell us it isn't true,"
he adds smugly as he places a hand on Abraham's shoulder. Abraham looks at me for confirmation, and I cannot find myself able to say anything. Yet it's exactly that which serves as confirmation. "Did my mother tell you?" I ask softly.
"Grandmother? No. Although she should know by now, too. The entire coven should know where that bloody demon is."
"No. Eamon, is he safe? Is he..." "You have it all wrong, Abel. Please let us explain it. Eamon isn't...
Isn't what? A murderer? A demon? A fucking evil entity that killed our parents just because he could? You're insane if you think I'll listen to anything you say, Elizabeth.
He tells me pointedly.
Mama, what the hell is happening?
Abraham's gaze flies between the two of us in confusion.
Yes, Mama. Tell your precious son everything. Tell him you've been protecting a demon, that you forced them to call their true parent's murderer father.
Where in God's name did you hear that from? Who told you? Because everything you think you know is wrong. I burst out, sick of hearing Eamon be called a demon when he is anything but.
Cress and Finn told me.
He replies smugly.
They told me everything.
What?
They also told me the secret to your ageless appearance.
He continues. What are you talking about? I frown. He nods to my neck, to the necklace I'm wearing. You have it all wrong, Abel. If you'll just let me explain. I take a deep breath as I try to keep my head straight. But after everything that has happened, I find myself slipping one second at a time.
I don't want any explanation. I don't want anything. You already killed my parents. Do you think anything can bring them back? That you can just give me back the years I lost with them? No, it doesn't work like that.
I shrink back from his tone, a sliver of fear going down my back. Abraham comes to my side, and despite the obvious confusion on his face, he grabs my hand, squeezing tightly.
You're mad, Abel,
his brother tells him.
I can't believe I didn't see this earlier. All this time you've drifted further and further, and I didn't even notice. I'm mad. Oh, how wrong you are, brother.
He shakes his head. Removing a knife from his coat, he waves it around, a sick smile on his face.
If I'm so mad, then your mama should bleed if I do this, no?
He says, and before I can realize what he means to do, the knife is embedded in my shoulder. I bunch over in pain, but gritting my teeth, I grasp the handle, pulling it out of my flesh. As it drops to the floor with a thud, my skin starts mending together. Abraham looks at me with shock in his eyes.
But...
he stammers. Abel has a smug expression as he comes closer.
She should have no abilities, no. That is what Grandma said, yet she does. But how?
Abraham asks dazedly.
From the demon, of course, because she's a demon's whore. That's what she is, a fucking Satan worshipper.
What do you want, Abel? I ask through gritted teeth. Though the wound is closing up, the physical pain is still there, just like the one in my heart where it feels like I've been stabbed over and over again.
Simple. An eye for an eye.
He smiles.
And a little extra something.
Before I know what's happening, Abel has Abraham in a chokehold, dragging him backwards and restraining him in his arms. Silver gleams in the light as he places a blade at his brother's throat. My eyes widen in alarm. What are you doing? I whisper in shock. He's your brother.
He's a waste of space, like you.
He scoffs. Please don't do that. Please, let Abraham go. Your grievance is with me, not with him, I beg.
Let me go.
Abraham struggles in his arms, yet somehow he's no match for Abel. How? When had Abel become so strong? How had he even found out all these things? How, when some of them were only known to me and Eamon? God, but I shouldn't have sent Eamon away. He would have been able to deal with this, and in a last attempt to salvage what's left of our family, I whisper his name, knowing he will come to me. Eamon, come. With the call in the wild, I know it's a matter of seconds before he will appear. Until then, I need to deal with Abel myself. Let Abraham go. I speak slowly as I take a step forward, keeping my eyes on him.
I might, for a price.
He suddenly says, a price? Anything. I readily agree. My eyes meet Abraham's, and I witness the pain and confusion that resides in there. My Abraham has always been a gentle spirit, and to be put in this position by his own brother must be utterly heartbreaking. As long as I can hold him off until Amon comes, I'll do anything.
Your necklace. I want your necklace.
He demands with a sneer.
I know it has to be given of your own free will, so don't try to trick me. Gift the necklace to me, and I will let him live.
My eyes widen at his outrageous request. How could he have known about the necklace? He's your brother, Abel, I exclaim, unable to believe he would kill his own blood.
I have no family, Elizabeth. You took it from me. Now I have nothing.
His blade touches Abraham's neck, a drop of blood spilling. Already it's a drop too much as I feel myself panic. Amon, Amon, where are you? Please come. The seconds trickle by, and my husband is nowhere to be seen, while Abraham is still in danger. And I know Abel means it. There's a deranged look in his eyes, a self-righteous conviction that he's using to justify his actions. Somehow, I am sure he would harm his brother to get what he wants. Fine, I'll give it to you. But you promise to let him go.
A fair exchange, as I said.
I don't have time to think what the implications are for giving away my necklace, the source of all my powers. Yet at this moment, Abraham is more important than that. He's the only one that matters. Bringing my hands to my neck, I unclasp the necklace, taking it off. Immediately, dizziness assails me at being separated from such an integral part of myself, and my soul weeps at being fragmented again. Here, I extend my hand. It is freely given. Now please, let Abraham go.
A deal is a deal.
He nods to himself, giving Abraham a strong push just as he wrenches the necklace from my hand. I quickly make to go to Abraham's side, but just as I take one step, a strangled cry echoes in the church. No! I shake my head as blood spills onto the ground. On his knees, Abraham is still looking at me, as blood gushes from the cut at his neck. The blade is stained with his blood, as Abel waves it back and forth, looking entirely too pleased with himself. No! 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 I scream, fear unlike any other erupting inside of me. Panicking, I throw myself over to him, my hands over his wound in an attempt to stop the blood. Where are you, Amon? Our son is dying! He's... Abraham tries to speak, the word obvious, yet one that never reaches my ears before he slumps against me. His breath is gone. His pulse is gone. He is... dead. A savage wail escapes my lips as I hold on to him, wishing with all my might I could save him, that I could return his breath and life essence. But I can't. My powers are gone. My abilities are bound. I am absolutely useless as I stare into my son's lifeless face, his eyes still open, his lips parted on a word that will never come out, one I will never hear again. In all my life, I've never felt as helpless as in that moment. What good does it do to have all the power in the world, but be powerless still? Abraham, please don't, I whisper, my voice becoming erratic as I will him back to life. Please, my baby, don't die on me, please. I plead continuously, yet there is no one to hear my prayer. No God, no gods, no deities. There is nothing but this aching emptiness that forms inside my heart. Even if Amon came now, he wouldn't be able to do anything. Even he doesn't have that much power. Abraham is dead. He is. dead. What have you done, Abel? I ask in an anguished whisper. What? How? I'd never thought my heart could take this much hurt, but as I cradle my dead child to my chest, I feel like howling in pain. How could you? Tears cloud my vision as I hug him closer. He can't be dead. No, my son can't be dead. I chant it in my head, thinking that maybe I will be able to will it into reality.
I'm merely righting your wrongs, Mama.
He laughs as he looks at his brother on the ground. Placing the necklace to his own neck, he takes a deep breath before setting his eyes on me once more.
And paving the way for a new future, one where the coven recognizes me and my new powers, one where they bow to me.
He continues, and I get a glimpse into his plan. I shake my head in dismay, not recognizing who he is anymore. Who the hell are you, Abel? I whisper.
Oh, I'm glad you asked, Elizabeth.
He gives me a wide smile. Coming closer, he leans into me until his words are dead whispers in my ears.
I'm the last thing you'll ever see.
Just as he draws back, I take a labored breath into my lungs. My gaze goes lower to where a knife is protruding from my chest. Compared to the last hit, this is a ghost of a pain, ironically. Yet unlike the other wound, this one doesn't heal. This one doesn't close up as it keeps bleeding and bleeding, slowly taking with it my life's essence. I don't even know if I realize it at that moment, or if I can coherently categorize my thoughts. I only know that I'm falling to the ground with Abraham by my side. My limbs are languid and unable to move, just as my consciousness slowly slips from me. The last thing I see is Abel, proudly cradling the necklace in his palm, his evil smile burned on my retina forever. But the last thing I hear is a roar that soars through the sky, echoing through every building, every space. A battle cry, unlike any other, and one that tells me he knows, and he is coming for me. He's coming for me. He's coming for us. If only I can hold on until then.
Part 3. Chapter 23. October 1955, Fairydale, Massachusetts. Groaning, I shift to my side as pain radiates from my breastbone. Bringing my hand to my chest, I expect to see it covered in blood. Instead, it comes back empty. I frown, then blink before my eyes widen in surprise. Bringing myself to a sitting position, I take in my surroundings. The sun is barely up in the sky, which suggests it's fairly early in the morning. I'm in a field. I quickly get to my feet just as panic threatens to overtake me, but as I turn around, I note a familiar building. The old church. I slept in a field behind the old church. Plucking some twigs from my hair and dusting my clothes, I scrunch my brows in concentration as I try to remember what had happened. I followed the sound of music that led me to the old church, and then, slowly, all the events from before come to me. I'd seen my death. I'd witnessed my death as Elizabeth. A pang erupts in my heart as I recall everything that had happened, and how it had happened. And by God, it couldn't have been more different than what Rhiannon showed me. Aemon did not kill me. He would have never killed me. Instead, I was killed by Abel, my own child. I died together with Abraham. Tears fall unbidden down my cheeks as I go over every little moment, reliving every bit of pain, disappointment, and heartbreak. For moments on end, I can't seem to get a hang of my feelings, and no matter how much I try to rein in my emotions, they are too powerful, too out of control. It feels like an eternity before I can breathe properly without sobbing my heart out. And as I slowly calm myself, my mind becomes sharper, the realizations trickling in. The necklace. Aemon had given me the necklace to confer on me an equal lifespan to his that would make me stronger. Previously, when he told me he was searching for an object that could help me, he'd been speaking about the necklace. Though some details are still fuzzy, the origin of the necklace still unclear, I know it's something extremely important to me, and I know exactly where it is now. Mr. Nicholson. If I hadn't seen those pictures of Mr. Nicholson in his 20s, maybe I wouldn't have believed it. But now I am absolutely certain. Mr. Nicholson is Abel, and the gemstone on his cane is my necklace. His powers and his healing were dependent on the cane when he'd fought Rhiannon, and now I know why. Because they are not his. They were never his. Oh my God! My hand flies to my mouth as realization sinks in. Mr. Nicholson, Abel, had killed me almost 200 years ago in order to steal my power. And if I remember correctly, he admitted to alerting the coven to Aemon's presence, which had undoubtedly led to his imprisonment. The only question is, how had he known about it? The why, I can wager a guess for. He'd been angry at us since a young age for the death of his family, and that had only festered as he'd grown older, until he'd decided to take the revenge into his own hands. Yet it's more than that, isn't it? He'd wanted recognition from the coven and abilities that he could only get through stealing. What might have started as revenge turned into a foolish quest for power, one he is still pursuing to this day. I cannot recall too much about the necklace, but given Abel's rapid decay, I think he's used up all the power inside of it, and now he needs more. The only way to get more is through Aemon. Even as I understand his thirst for power, I still cannot comprehend how he could hurt his own brother. How could he kill him in cold blood? Maybe in a twisted way I can understand why he would go for me, or Aemon, because we were guilty in his mind. But Abraham, he'd never done anything wrong in his life. My heart hurts every time I think of my fallen son and the way he'd died, with his throat slit from behind. Damn you, Abel! Damn you and your cowardice! Despite my renewed sorrow at Abraham's death, there was a modicum of peace at knowing my Lydia had fully lived her life. She'd somehow escaped unscathed, and she'd lived a happy life. Don't give it to him. Lydia had known. She'd had a vision about it, and I'm quite certain she'd seen Abraham's death, too. Why hadn't she warned us? Why hadn't she said anything? More theories are going through my mind the more I think of the past, yet one question will not leave me be. How could Abel have known about the necklace, or about Aemon's identity? For him to accuse Aemon of being a demon means he must have had a source from the coven. But who? As I stop in front of the church, I try once more to open the door, cursing out loud when it doesn't budge. It seems the only way I can access the church would be through the catacombs. Yet I'll have time to think about that later. With the hour growing late, I trudge my way back to the Hale Manor, all the while ruminating over the new information I'd received. Cress and Finn. Abel had mentioned those names. Could it be? A gasp escapes me as I think back to the two men who'd advised Fiona in the past, and who had now made a sudden appearance in Fairydale. Could it be that they are the Cress and Finn Abel was talking about? Certainly, they seem to be present everywhere and have a vested interest in Aemon. I increase my pace as I remember it's still dangerous for me to be outside. At least now I know who is sending these creatures after me. Abel. Ironic how he'd branded Aemon a demon, but he's not above using those evil creatures for his own gain. What I'm still a little unsure of is how my blood figures into all this. Is it really a source of power? Since I'd experimented before, my abilities are quite finite. Or is there something more that I am not aware of? How could it be useful to both Abel and Rhiannon, yet for completely different purposes? Reaching the Hale Gate, I make my way to the main entrance of the house, getting inside. Yet before I can stealthily sneak to my room, Rhiannon calls out my name.
Darcy, do join us in the drawing room.
Curious, I head for the drawing room. Hello, I greet everyone, not surprised to see the two men from before present.
These are my special guests. They are here from the Holy See and will oversee the ritual at the end of the month,
Rhiannon explains. I put on a smile as I take a seat opposite them.
I am Crestapeel, and this is Fenderidge.
He introduces himself and his friend. Darcy O'Sullivan. I nod. Both of them have impressive physiques, taller than any men I've ever seen except Aemon. Cress is dark-haired and dark-eyed with an olive complexion. Finn has equally dark hair, but his eyes are a hazel shade, his skin lighter. Their poise and demeanor remind me of Aemon, but it's the format of their last names that makes me more suspicious. How are they related to him? Yet the more I watch them, the more I realize there is something about them, something that makes me wary and anxious at the same time.
They are here to help us with all the logistical aspects of the ritual. They are specialists in demonology and know about Aemon best.
I see. Is there anything I can help with? I ask politely. Right as the words are out of my mouth, I get struck with the most potent headache. Gritting my teeth, I try not to show the physical symptoms as I push against it with all my strength. Yet as I meet Cress's gaze, I note his eyes narrowing at me, his mouth slanting down. Finn is also regarding me with an odd expression. It's a second later that it dawns on me what could be happening. The headache isn't a regular one, is it? Especially as it feels as though there is a relentless pressure against my skull, almost as if someone were trying to probe into my thoughts. The realization is startling, and as more information aligns in my brain, I am inclined to make the educated guess that these men have similar abilities to Aemon. And if that is the case, then they are definitely trying to read my mind. A little too annoyed at the prospect, I focus all my strength into building a solid mental barrier, as Elizabeth had done in the past. But going one step further, I visualize my mind as a wall they are trying to break, hitting against it without stop. Focusing my attention on the outside forces, I build an offensive as I mold the wall into a weapon, pushing them out of any corner of my mind. Everything happens at once. The moment I attack, Cress and Finn physically recoil, giving each other a secretive nod before they resume their positions as if nothing happened.
We will have a meeting at the end of the week,
Cress says.
The other members of the coven will be present too, and we will detail the terms for the attack.
Attack? I frown.
Aemon is a very dangerous demon, Mrs. O'Sullivan. As Miss Hale must have told you, his seal is weakening.
He purses his lips.
Aemon was locked in the old church on the 31st of October, 1805. In just about 10 days, it will be exactly 150 years since then, and it will be the perfect time to perform the ultimate ritual to kill him.
10 days? Rhiannon had mentioned there would be guests coming at the end of the month, but I hadn't realized they were planning on completing the ritual so soon.
While he is still weak, we must focus all our energies into neutralizing him. If not, it will be increasingly difficult to do so.
Why? I suddenly ask. Why couldn't you kill him the first time? Cress and Finn share a look.
As I mentioned, Aemon is no ordinary demon, Miss O'Sullivan. Even with the entire Coven Circle present, we could not defeat him.
Dear God, what happened after I died? My heart squeezes in my chest at thinking what my Aemon might have endured. Yes, I might have been upset with him momentarily, but even as I lay dying, he was my last thought, my last hope. And he had come for me. Of that I am certain. It's how they'd trapped him in that blasted church. But just thinking of him hurt makes me physically ache. I swallow hard, closing my eyes for a second as I banish that thought. It's not the moment to lose myself in my grief. I need to be strong to navigate the circumstances at hand. And the best way I can do that is if I have as much information as possible. Rhiannon had been very vague about the ritual, except to specify that they would need my blood to fuel the spell. Yet I'm still uncertain what happened the first time. How had that one failed? I understand that. I fake a smile. What I do not understand is how. Can you walk me through the events of that day?
I don't see why that is necessary.
Finn adds, narrowing his eyes at me. You require my participation, is that not so? I raise a brow.
We do.
Cress takes over as he lightly touches Finn. Then I would like to have all the details. I would like to know what I am risking and what the chances of success are for such a risk. Hasn't Rhiannon told you that I have not yet fully agreed to participate? They turn to Rhiannon for confirmation. She gives them a bitter nod. Cress exhales in annoyance.
We received information that Aemon was sighted in Fairydale, and we made a plan of attack. Unfortunately, by the time we arrived, Aemon had already killed Elizabeth Montfort when we caught up with him.
Cress pauses, and following a hand cue, Finn continues.
We engaged Aemon in a fight to keep him distracted until the elders arrived. When they did, they tried a nullification spell, which was unsuccessful. After that, they decided something was better than nothing and settled on another powerful containment spell.
My lip twitches in amusement as they don't seem to realize their slip. They just confirmed it had been them who'd fought Aemon in the past.
The reason why they died, Darcy, is that they attempted multiple forbidden spells one after another. Their energy was depleted, but they used all of it in one last effort to seal Aemon.
Rhiannon interjects. I nod thoughtfully. You're saying there isn't much risk as long as everything goes according to plan. Rhiannon nods. But what if you can't neutralize him now, either?
We can. With your power, we will be able to, just like Lydia foresaw.
I feel a pang in my chest at the thought of my daughter. Let's say that is so. I nod, turning to the two men. Why could you not kill him? I ask pointedly. With rhodium. Their eyes widen for a brief second before they compose themselves.
And how do you know about rhodium?
Oh, Rhiannon must have mentioned it when she was telling me about Fiona and Elizabeth, is that not so? I plaster a smile on my face. She frowns, but she doesn't disprove my claims, seemingly thinking she might have told me something of that nature.
You are correct that rhodium is a metal that is poisonous to this demon.
Finn admits, his voice strained.
But it is not that simple. The only way for him to die is to pierce his heart with a pure rhodium weapon.
So why could you not do that? My question seems to have struck a sore spot as both stiffen, their fists clenching. Yet just as before, in a matter of seconds, they have themselves back under control.
Aemon is a skilled fighter. He is a master sword fighter and undefeated in hand-to-hand combat. To pierce his heart, one would need to get close enough to him, and that was impossible.
I narrow my eyes at his answer. Odd that he would focus only on Aemon's skills on the battlefield when he is supposed to be a vicious demon with countless abilities. What about while the elders attempted the spell? Surely that amount of energy could have held him immobile. I counter.
Anyone interfering with this spell would have suffered the same repercussions as he. Trust me, Miss O'Sullivan, there was no way to kill him back then.
He assures me, though it clearly pains him to make that statement. And what makes you think there will be a different outcome this time? How would you even go about this neutralizing spell if rhodium is the only way to kill him? My questions seem to enrage them further, which to me signifies that there are severe gaps in their plan, and that they are not at all certain anything will work.
Because...
Kress grits his teeth.
He will be far too weak this time to pose the same challenge as before, and he will be neutralized with rhodium in a slightly different manner.
He clicks his tongue against his teeth, his eyes like two razors as he cuts me with his gaze. And with that, I know I will not get any more information from them. I nod with a smile.
We will discuss this more in depth when the Coven members arrive here, Darcy. Don't worry, you will find out everything when the time is right. Though this is dangerous.